Welcome to the Keeping It Real podcast by Real World Academy, where we hear from top educators, entrepreneurs, and creative thinkers on how to design your future.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Keeping It Real podcast hosted by Real World Academy. I'm your host, Domenico, and I'm here with my friend, Jody Grinwald, who's the CEO and founder of Applaud Our Kids. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, Domenico. So nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So just to give a little background on Applaud Our Kids, it's a foundation that gives children the opportunity to find their own voice, increase their self-esteem, and give them a sense of belonging while studying the performing arts. So I'm going to start the interview with a loaded question, and I feel like I have a little bit of permission to ask this because I myself am an artist, but I think it's important to frame the conversation this way. Out of all of the youth empowerment causes that you could choose to devote your life to, why did you choose the arts as your main focus?
It's a great question. And a loaded question, you're 100% right, but there's a couple of reasons. So growing up as a kid, I could not sing. That was not my forte, but I did play three instruments and I loved being able to do that. And I felt like I was part of something. It was a great feeling. Not that I was the best at violin or cello. And then I played flute for several years. But I loved it. And I loved being part of something, but I grew up listening to my dad sing opera all the time. And there were times that he would be singing in our living room and all of a sudden we'd be hearing applauding from outside because the kids and the adults from the neighborhood could hear him and they would be listening and they would applaud him. And I would see how it would just make them feel and how it would make him feel. And one of the biggest regrets he had before he passed away was not being able to take the lessons in vocal lessons that he wanted to take because he couldn't afford to. And that was a deathbed regret. And my sister and I, who co-founded the organization, thought that this is unfair. Why should kids feel the way that way, where they can't connect to something they need and want to be a part of because they can't afford to? And so that was why we decided that it was important to create this. Yes, we know we're not feeding the hungry and housing the poor, but we are nourishing the minds of kids when it comes to the performing arts. And we understand what that does. And we have seen it firsthand.
Absolutely. It's a tough space to operate in. You know, it's hard to make a case for in many instances because parents are so skeptical about encouraging their children to, you know, pursue their passion if it involves, you know, the arts, whether that's music or dance or design. So when you're confronted with that criticism, how do you not justify it, but how do you make clear that the skill set that these kids are learning under private instruction for music and dance, that they're able to apply those skills in areas outside of the arts and in the real world?
It's really hard, and you're 100% right. It is, you know, it's not as measurable as some of the other things that are out there for sure. You know, for us, we learned very early on the importance of sharing stories. So when a child comes into our program, if the parent allows, we'll take a picture of the child wearing our T-shirt, right, with the Applaud Our Kids name on it, and then we will follow the child, right? So that the child will take we'll welcome them to the AOK family. And then we'll get a quote a couple of months down the road from them to share the stories. I think the only way to do that in the arts, the only way to really connect people to it is for them to see who's taking the lessons, why they're taking the lessons, and see that their dollars are truly impacting kids. That is one of the reasons why we hold a yearly showcase that brings the kids out that we teach. And even if they do, you know, three lines of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, we're fine with that because we want our funders to see these are the kids you're funding. There they are. And you can see their smiling faces and how they're connecting. But you're right. It's an ongoing issue, not just for us, for all organizations in the arts. It's very hard to measure because it's social and emotional learning.
Absolutely. And at Real World Academy, we tackle a lot of those same issues too. So we noticed that even though the results are not necessarily quantifiable. You're seeing that impact through, you know, the career trajectories that these students end up taking and, you know, what they're capable of doing after learning how to commit to something as difficult as music or dance for so long.
And I want to just add to that for a second, if you don't mind. So like acting, right? Because we do fun acting lessons too. So now you're teaching kids when they're acting, right? That is leadership number one, but also public speaking, right? Because, you know, they may not go into acting down the road, but in many cases, there's a lot of times, whether you're public speaking in front of thousands or just in front of your team in a job that has nothing to do with the arts, they take those, you know, those skills and they use them just in a different way. So the art and the arts, music is math. So there's tons of different ways to correlate it.
Absolutely. And I was reading through your website and you mentioned some very interesting observations that art creates responsibility, independence, and creativity. So maybe you can expand on that a little bit more for the examples of students who may not go into the arts full time after they graduate from Applaud Our Kids, but they're taking these life lessons with them. So how does Applaud Our Kids training pertain to responsibility and independence?
So, you know, for instance, when you're the new kid coming in, right? So your family, let's say, has not been able to provide you lessons. And then all of a sudden you're now going and being infused into a group that has been working together for 5 or 6 years, you know, you're learning how to show up and get acclimated with the rest of the group. If your responsibility, I mean, you have to then take that information and rehearse and practice back at your house, right? If it's something of importance to you, you know, you're going to be in a recital, you know, you're going to be in a show, you know, you have lines that you have to remember. Or if you're a musician, there's music notes you have to learn and you're responsible. You know, we have kids over at Rowan Conservatory of Music or Rowan Community Music School, I should say, and they're part of a group. So you're now just not responsible for a solo lesson. You're showing up for your entire group. And so if you mess up on the keyboard, everybody's affected. So now you are responsible for whatever that instrument is to learn it and connect with it and share your talent with the rest of the group. So, you know, I hope I'm answering your question the way you were hoping I would. But I feel like showing up on time, being there, learning, taking the lessons and then coming back, showcasing that you've learned from one lesson to the next. And not all the kids rehearse. Let's face it, you know, some do. Some don't, but I will say the majority of the kids are so grateful for what we're able to provide that they want to rehearse and they're super excited. And I just want to share one really quick thing. We have sisters we fund, violin and piano, and they love to send us videos of the two of them at home rehearsing together and doing songs so that we can post it. And so that just makes them feel really good.
It's such a rare thing to be able to instill intrinsic motivation in a young person, to instill that passion in them to where they're doing this on their own, you know, without a teacher or an authority figure standing behind their back saying, turn to page 3 and practice this scale. So that is absolutely incredible that you're able to do that at scale with people. That I'm wondering if you could touch on what is the population that you serve? So what is the type of student that comes to Applaud Our Kids? What situation are they in before they join the organization? And how do they turn out once they move on?
So we're celebrating our 5th year this year. So we're super excited about that. So we have gotten to see some of the kids go start from where they are and grow over time. But the kids are, if you think about the free and reduced lunch kids in the school systems, right? They have to meet the financial needs requirements. We actually fund kids that are a little over the requirements for free and reduced lunch, because we knew even with $5,000 over every household income level that NJ SNAP shows that you have to follow, we knew that they still couldn't afford ongoing lessons. Then the guitar or whatever instrument, we fund that as well. And we fund their dance shoes and the recital costumes. So, we knew that what we were going to be able to do was really going to help kids that are in that space and a little bit higher than that space. And with that being said, they just, you know, I've seen them grow exponentially. We've had kids that are on the spectrum that wouldn't make eye contact with us first meeting, right? We met with the parent and we chatted. chatted, we got it all set up, but the child really wouldn't pay much attention to us. Third year in, right? They were with us for 3 years. Third year in, they were hugging us.
Wow.
It was incredible. It was incredible. We had a nonverbal student in middle school who was taking drum lessons, and his parents swore that he would never get up and do a solo in our showcase. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house because he did. He got up, he got behind the drums, and he did a drum solo. And it was incredible. And he even danced in our finale, because we find teachers that will match the child's needs, that will bring out the best. We do background checks. So the kids are definitely, you know, from all different backgrounds and parts of New Jersey. They have to meet the financial needs requirements, but we are really excited about the diversity of the, you know, of those that we are funding. Now, we started in Ocean County. Now we're in Essex and Somerset and Gloucester, and we've really, Hudson, we're in 7 counties right now and hoping to hit 21 counties, helping kids in 21 counties, you know, very soon.
And in New Jersey, just to confirm for listeners.
Yes, I'm sorry. In New Jersey. Yes.
That is so amazing. Wow. I'm inspired. You're getting students, because I know how difficult it is for adults in their 30s and 40s to, you know, perform on stage and do a drum solo and do things like that. That's just incredible that you're instilling that confidence in these students at such a young age. So that kind of leads me to my next question. Is there a correlation between support for one's passion and self-esteem? So have you noticed students' self-esteem grow once they're put in an environment where it's a safe space to say, okay, hey, you want to try out the guitar? Great. You want to try out the piano? Great. How do you create that environment to support their self-esteem?
I have a great story for this one. I really do. When we were hosting, I think it was our second event, our second showcase, there's a girl who takes vocal lessons, and she was petrified to get on the stage. So petrified, every time she would think about it, she would start crying. And we did tech rehearsal the whole day. Her teacher was there, and she couldn't do it all day. She was really panicking. And we told her, you don't have to. Like, we don't force them if they don't want to get up on the stage. But she was so betwixt and between what she wanted to do, and she felt like she wanted to, and she would let everybody down. And I think she was around 12 when she started with us. And you know, even right before she did get on the stage, but she got on the stage with her teacher. And so she felt the comfort in that. And she did a great job. But the funniest part is then the year later, she continued with her lessons. Now she gets on that stage like she owns it. Like it, she continued, you know, she's three and a half years with us now. And she, I mean, I cannot believe it's the same girl who cried the entire day, because at one point she wanted to, then she didn't want to, then she didn't know if she could, and she didn't want to let people down. She got on the stage with her teacher, but the next year she got on that stage alone, and she was taking no prisoners. She was up there, and last year she was amazing too. I can't wait to see her again this year.
Wow. I mean, that really leads us to a discussion about nature versus nurture in many ways. So you had a student who did not have the support system to hone and develop that passion that she had. And, you know, not to get too critical of the school system, but the reason why organizations like yours exist is because we don't have a school system that allows for, you know, that creativity to thrive. So It's very interesting. Do you feel like you're able to see the potential in students right away, or do you more often than not get surprised over time?
Students, I think it's a little bit of everything. You know what I mean? They don't have to be talented in order to take lessons. We don't audition them. If they have a passion, we put them in. You know, and sometimes, you know, they'll sing a song at the showcase, and you'll be like, okay, this is a hobby. You know what I'm saying? This is not going to be lifelong. And then others, you know, we have a girl, she has an original song out on Spotify, and she's doing phenomenal, and she's writing music with her teacher, and she's part of our Applaud and Give Back program. And it's just incredible. And she had natural talent coming in. You know, others, their talent has grown over time. So I think it's really about what they want to put in, the support from home, and the support from their teacher, because I have to say, of course, there's been cases where it wasn't really a supportive home, but it was a fabulous and supportive teacher. Mm-hmm. And that's why they continued on and stayed connected and wanted to improve their talent. And so and then there are other kids that do it as a hobby and for an outlet. You know, a lot of the kids, unfortunately, not a lot, I shouldn't say that. You know, some of the kids don't have an easy at home. And some are in foster care. Others have had great loss in their life. And so this becomes an extended family for them.
I wanted to touch on that because you serve such a large student population. So why don't you speak a little bit about the age of these kids and how diverse that, you know, steps?
It is very different and very diverse. So we started out from 7 to 18, and 7 being that the research shows that...
Let's say that again. Yeah. You're serving students from 7 years old through childhood into young adulthood. That's pretty incredible. Have you had, I apologize, have you had a student for the entire length of time, or you guys aren't that old of an organization yet?
Yeah, we're not that old yet. But so 3.5 is the max right now. We're 5 years in. We didn't have a student that stayed with us the full 5 years. You know, COVID hit. I think that if COVID didn't hit, we probably would have. But because of that, there were kids that were part of the organization that just didn't want to do online. It wasn't working for them. The ones that started out, a few that started out with us from the beginning. So they kind of decided no more lessons, and kids get involved in other things or they don't want to be involved. But yes, we have definitely, the growth is incredible. But I want to say though, Domenico, we don't just go to 18. We have a brand new program that goes from 18 to 22. So we do fund between 18 and 22 years old, but there's a hitch to that. The hitch to that is it's called the Employment and Give Back Program. And so if you're a senior and we're funding you as a senior in high school, you are then invited to stay on, where we will continue to fund you till 22 if you meet the financial criteria, but you have to give back 40 volunteer hours for the year, not in a month or a week, for the year, 20 hours in the first half of the year, 20 hours in the second, or you can break it up any way you want, and give back to really learn about the inner workings of the organization that's supporting you. It provides them work experience, professional experience, and they get to see what it takes to make it all really happen. They do social media for us. They come to events and help, they'll make some phone calls, do some emails, but we want them to really learn and gain work experience as well through the organization.
That's amazing. That makes me curious, just being around programs like this and, seeing music students evolve and change over time. I know that there's a really drastic difference in dedication and talent, for lack of a better word. So how do you, I'm just curious about the different levels of instruction you provide. So how do you take into account the fact that you might have a set of students that are beginners, and then you have intermediate students and, semi-pro students? Do you have different staffing for different levels of instruction, or how does that work?
That's a great question. So just so you know, we don't provide any of the lessons, right? So the lessons are all done from studios close to their home. So we find studios.
You connect to the...
We connect to them. And then we look for a teacher that's the right fit. Okay. So then it goes even deeper, deeper than that. So we, if we find a dance student that's never taken dance, we'll go to the dance studio that's closest to their home that we're working with, or we'll create a new relationship. And hopefully that all works out. And then we'll say, this child does not have any dance experience, but is 14. Do you have a class that would be able to be the right fit for them? And then yes, or it's easier for solo students, right? So musical students are easier in some ways if they're doing solo lessons. But then there are kids that are close to Gloucester County who go to Rowan Community Music School that are then become part of, some take solo lessons, others become part of a group. So every child is different, and every conversation with the teachers and Melissa, I don't handle that part of our organization. She handles that and helps the kids find the connection within the organization. Mm-hmm. Within the studios. And that way they can they can be successful in their lessons. And of course, all background checks are done to ensure the safety of the students.
Gotcha. I'm curious, and you don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but have you ever had any negative experiences with schools that you partner up with? And have you had to kind of pivot and be like, oh, we won't send students to this place anymore? And what would be a reason for that?
I don't, we really haven't had, I'm grateful to say, a negative experience that way. What we've had a negative experience with, a few, is that we do not, when we fund lessons, we pay directly the organization. It doesn't go to the student. So every month we get an invoice from XYZ Dance Studio or XYZ Music School, and we pay their invoice. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is we don't pay the full scale price. We're not like Jane Smith walking in. We're a nonprofit organization. So they have to accept a lower pay scale in order to allow our students in. And unfortunately, I have to say 95% of the studios we have come to knock on the door and say, hey, will you take one of our students? This is what we can afford to pay. Have said yes. But there have been some that have hung up on us. They think that we have, an ulterior motive or another agenda or whatever it is. They don't, and they won't take our calls, or they don't call us back, or they say, no, we want, $150 a lesson and we're not going to take less. We just know they're not the right fit for us. They're, we have too many others that have said yes without any problems.
Right. Right. I'm curious, have you ever thought of expanding into, music recording instruction as well, and communicating to various studios in the area? I know there are a number of nice music studios in Monmouth County.
Yes, absolutely. And like Lake House Music is one of our studios that we can send students to. We have a couple of different studios that are like that, and we're excited. We haven't sent a student yet there, but we want to. And John Liedersdorf is very kind to us and is willing to take kids in. So that's not an issue at all. But yes, we keep evolving, Domenico. So, part of what we do now too is we send teachers out into existing programs, which we didn't do before. So if there's like the Boys and Girls Club, Salvation Army, we'll pay for a teacher to go in and teach multiple kids because the kids don't have transportation to get lessons. So if there all of a sudden was an opportunity where we saw the need for that, where, they would go in and we'd figure out a way to work with studios, I think that would be another option. But we just keep evolving and listening to what the needs are. And then we meet with our board and our advisory council, and we make decisions.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's an idea I've been toying with for a while, because there is a huge demand amongst young people to get into the music production space. And because of the way that the technology works now, in the past, you needed a record deal to fund, big budget recording. So if you didn't have access to $100,000, you wouldn't be able to record your song. Where today, quite honestly, if you have $1,000, you could get a great computer, a great preamplifier, and a great microphone, and be able to make Grammy Award winning music with the proper training. So, there are opportunities for organizations such as ours to almost create like a situation where there's tech proficiency training for young music producers, and tying back to where these skill sets might apply outside of music. You're learning, like I said, tech proficiency. So I don't know, I'm just brainstorming, but
no, I have to be honest, I love it.
Yeah. So
I would love to do that. We also thought of film, right? So at first we thought, if we had any students that wanted to take any, learn more about creating film, and we just haven't had that yet. If that happens and that comes up, anything about the arts, right? We've had people come to us and go gymnastics, and we're like, no, we don't do that. Like that's not what we do. And then we feel bad saying no, of course, but that's just it's not our mission. But it's important. Sports are important. Everything is important. But sports gets funded a lot more than the arts ever does. And it's sad.
Yep. No, I agree. And you're serving multiple missions as it is. Like the fact that you're doing music, dance, and film is incredible, because, all of those different spaces require so much nuance and, in-depth understanding of what it takes to make that happen. Here's another thing I wanted to touch on, the fact that young people could be so entrepreneurial these days with their, you know, passions in the arts. So something to think about would be like, if you have a student who does want to be a professional singer or a songwriter or a producer, there are ways in which you could market yourself, you know, to a large audience and be able to create a brand where you can, you know, make a career out of your passion. So that's something that Real World Academy really gets into, is, you know, aspects of financial literacy and entrepreneurship and networking. So, you know, it's just, I'm just spitballing about how this all kind of ties in, and how, you know, these different skill sets that through practicing the arts, you know, these lifelong skill sets that you develop. So
absolutely. I should mention, we have a performance group that is audition only. And the reason I mention that is we have a few kids that, one specifically, Alexa, she has written her own songs. She's produced them. She has put them out on Spotify. She has, and we always, always put it out for her on our social media and try to, you know, get people to listen and like and follow and all of that. So we encourage it. You know, and our performance group, just so you know, they go out and perform anywhere. So no cost. If people want to make a donation, they can. But they performed at Feinstein's 54 Below in New York. They perform at nonprofit, for-profit events. They're talented kids who have incredible voices that just love to share their talent. They're what we call our Kids Helping Kids portion of our organization, or pillar of our organization. And then we're teaching them the importance of giving back through using their talent.
Wow, that's incredible. And what's the name of the group?
It's the AOK Performance Group for Applaud Our Kids. So it's the AOK Performance Group.
Wow. I wanted to shift gears a bit and discuss, what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced operating a foundation such as this?
I kind of say this a lot. I think the biggest was for people to pay attention at first, because I worked in nonprofit organizations that had very well-known names in my past. My background is all nonprofit for the most part, working for American Heart and American Lung Association. People knew those names. But when you say Applaud Our Kids, people are like, and I also learned, when you say that it's in honor of my dad, I almost had to stop saying that, because then people thought it was a cute thing that we were doing, and what a sweet and nice thing, and not a professional organization that was really making a difference in the lives of the kids that we serve. It was kind of like they gave me a nice pat on the head and said, you know, great daughter, you know, what a great daughter that you did, you know, you and your sister, wow, great daughter. And that was really hard to be taken seriously. So it was about finding, and we found one person who believed in us, who then introduced us to other people, who then introduced us to other people. So I highly will say that to anybody who wants to start any kind of organization, it's a finding one or two people who believe in it enough to help guide you. I mean, I have to tell you, Domenico, I went to our first funder with pen in hand, not even asking for funding, asking for advice. Do we have the right organization? Are we making a good choice? Who do I need to talk to? And he was open and honest and shared it with me. I went to the local chamber of commerce and started going to their meetings. But again, in the networking with these people, one of the biggest obstacles was if they said they were from ABC Incorporated organization, them paying attention to us. So our biggest, beyond the funding, which I think every nonprofit, if you ask them that question, they're all going to say funding. But I want to be different in telling you that it really has been about people taking us seriously to say we are worth their time and that we're making a true difference. So it's always been like we had to have to prove ourselves. Whereas American Heart, American Lung, YMCAs, they've already done that. So we're in the prove ourselves version of who we are. And that's been hard. You know, I'm going to say that's been hard to be taken seriously. But we're 5 years in, and I'm grateful for every dollar and everybody who did believe in us, because we wouldn't have made it to 5 years.
Absolutely. I mean, you're preaching to the choir. It's a near impossible challenge, especially, you know, due to the fact that the economy and our culture is so volatile at the moment with all the changes that are happening. You know, in the workplace, you know, everybody's going virtual. So I'm sure that was a challenge for you guys as well as it was for us. So Do you feel, since you're such a young organization, did you have a big break? Did you have a transition period where you're like, okay, we could actually do this? And what did that look like?
So we started the organization with $100 that was in my father's wallet that he left when he passed away. And then we wound up, believe it or not, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but it's true. We wound up on Channel 5 with Good Day Street Talk. We had not even a full year's worth of funding for a child in the bank yet. But we went out there and said who we were and what we did. And all of a sudden, friends, family, others started to give to our GoFundMe and crowd raising, actually. And then people started to come in. And all of a sudden, we were at 1 year for a child, 2 years for a child. We just kept talking about it. I think that what happened was, is when we finally, when we placed our first child into her first lesson, she was over at Downtown Dance Academy. And I remember, like it was yesterday. And I remember my sister and I looking at each other going, we have got to make this work, because the smile on this kid's face was just so incredible to be put into her these dance lessons for the first time, handing her her dance shoes in a dance bag. I mean, it was just, I wish I could have bottled it. I think that that was for us, that was the turning point of us saying, we have to work harder. We have, no matter what anybody thinks. But, you know, I tell this story. I think the transition for us was when there was a child who found her father who passed away of an overdose the day of our event, our big showcase. And she was seven. She was seven at the time. So it was 4 years ago. And we got a phone call that he had passed away, and the girl found him. And that was on a Sunday. And on Tuesday, we got a phone call from the grandmother with the little girl crying in the background. The mother, I believe, was in jail. And so the little girl was petrified that she was going to lose her dance lessons. And so you hear her crying in the background saying, please tell Jody and Melissa not to take away my dance lessons. It's all I have left. She's seven. And so that was forever will always be on, like, I could tell the story 27 million times and I'll still get upset about it, teary-eyed about it, is that that was the turning point for us. That whoever believed in us, whoever didn't. But that moment, we knew no matter what, we had to continue. Because what if we are the only thing they have left? What if that's all they have to look forward to?
And that's what people have to understand. You're providing a holistic support system for kids who don't have it. And you're doing it through art. You're making it fun. You're making it so it doesn't seem like a chore to them. You know, and you're providing, like I said, you're providing that foundation for them to grow into adults, and you're doing it in a way that pertains to their passions. So that's just, I mean, what more could you do? I have a soft spot for that too, because obviously my background, but that's incredible. Wow. So I want to leave it off with one more question for you.
Sure.
What would you like the impact of Applaud Our Kids to be long-term, let's say 10, 20 years from now? And, well, I guess you already shared your success stories, but just what's your long-term vision for the organization? Where would you like to see it grow?
So we obviously started in the one, just so I go back for a second, and we wanted to get it right. Then we went to two, Monmouth Ocean, and now we're at seven, because we really believe the importance. And because we have to prove ourselves that we get it right wherever we go. But of course, we long-term, the full state of New Jersey, we're working with large organizations now, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Club, Salvation Army, names that are way bigger than us. They're looking to us to help fund. And then getting out of New Jersey, right? So our goal, if you were to ask me, you know, I don't know how many years it would take to go, you know, nationwide, but I feel like that's, you know, maybe my kids will continue it after I'm no longer here and get it to that. I don't know if I'll ever see it that way, but that would be what I would want. I, you know, my yes, it's in inspiration, inspired by my dad in honor of him. And so I would love for people to know who he was and his name. But more importantly, I would love for kids from across the country who are just wishing and hoping to be in that dance family or take that guitar lesson. And we had a kid who said his guitar was his best friend when we handed it to him. That we create more best friendships and more extended families and people to feel more supported and connected because they're coming to us. They're telling us they need it. So we're not going to them. They're coming to us. So I long-term success to me is get it right in New Jersey throughout the entire state and then move it throughout the country. I think New York will be our next stop. And that's our long-term goal for right now. So New Jersey, New York. Down the road, if you ask me 20 years, maybe I'd love to see it go through the, nationwide.
Well, we got to bump that up. I think we can make that happen a lot faster than 20 years. So
I would love that. I want to see it. I want to see it for sure. Yeah.
So remind our audience, how many students have you had to date total? Just so we know total.
Way over 100. Yeah, way over 100. I don't have the exact number. The problem with the numbers is the kids that come and go. And that's the harder part because we have kids that'll come and they'll do 3 months and then they'll say I'm done. Then we have kids that stay with us for the year and then they leave. And the other harder part is so when we go have a teacher go into Salvation Army, so they'll teach maybe 14 kids 1 week and only 10 show up the next, and then they switch over to more different kids. So it's a little transient on some of the organizations when we send a teacher in. That's harder to calculate for us. But way over, I could say, honestly, with all honesty, way over 100, probably around 150 plus.
Wow. That's incredible. So let's leave it there, Jody. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we close it off, why don't you tell our audience where we can find you, where people can, find out more about Applaud Our Kids, where they can donate, any events that are coming up, let us know.
Absolutely. So, okay. Applaudourkids.org. So it's applaudourkids.org is the website. You can find Applaud Our Kids on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. And so those are some of the ways to connect with us. And also we have a 5-year showcase coming up. It is the Let Them Dream Big concert at the Vogel. So that's coming up. And we host a showcase every single year. And we also host a Step into the Spotlight soiree event, which will happen in the fall, where adults take the stage and they go in front of TV, film, and Broadway stars. And we pick 10 adults that have to audition, that go in for 21 and older, that go in front of phenomenal judges from TV, film, and Broadway. And it's all to support the kids. And then we invite some of our families that we support to come and they watch. But we have our sponsors and lots of people, usually around 200 people plus, come to this event. And it's so much fun. It's a gala, but it's a unique gala. And the fun part is it's dressed in your best artistic flair. So we get a lot of fun outfits coming in for that. So that's going to be coming up in the fall. So just go to the website and you'll be able to see all the upcoming events.
Sounds like fun. Thank you so much, Jody, for coming on. And thank you everybody for tuning in to the Keeping It Real podcast.
Thanks, Domenico.
Thank you for listening to the Keeping It Real podcast by Real World Academy. If you're a student looking for a mentor or a parent looking to help your kid design a happy life and a successful career, visit our website at realworldacademy.org and subscribe to us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you listen to podcasts to hear more exclusive content on how to design your future.